Good morning, Karthik.
Very good morning.
And welcome to the Auroville Radio.
Thank you.
And thank you for the talk on Saturday. Yes, for those who were not there, sorry for them to miss it, they can listen to the recording. But can you share a little bit about yourself? Who are you? How did you manage to get across with Auroville and the ideas?
Well, I think I came to Auroville the first time in 2007 after having read some works of Sri Aurobindo, and it sort of aligned with some of the ideas that I had, because I used to be in the open source software movement, and it was about social justice, it was about sharing, it was about some of these, you know, fundamental principles, these 12 key principles that the mother in Sri Aurobindo talks about. And so I was fascinated by the great vision of these remarkable people. And I thought I would come and, you know, visit Auroville. So I came here the first time in 2007, then I went away. I didn't come after that for 7 years. And then last year I came, I with a little bit more gray hair in my forehead, I was able to grasp much more of what is really going on, and you know, the importance of a township like Auroville for the future of humanity, some of the vision, some of the values, and its relevance, and I want to learn more. And so, yeah, I mean, it's just been a very sort of, it's been very magnetic for me. It's been a strong attraction.
But your field of work and study and research, and now you're also preparing the PhD, is sociology, and it's about development. And Saturday we heard some thoughts, actually overview, on centralization and decentralization and what actually shaped the courses of this movement. So how do you see that? I mean, where Auroville fits into this picture?
For me, Auroville is a great example of decentralization. I mean, it's an example of how, if people are left alone, they're able to design their own, community. They're able to sort of deal with their own lives, deal with the, you know, of course, there's a certain number of centralization here. The centralization being the great vision of Auroville, the, you know, fundamental values of the mother and Sri Aurobindo, and which is a uniting force between, the different ideologies within Auroville. But, you know, in essence, Auroville for me is a great example of a community that is trying to sort of get to the next level of evolution with the principles of decentralization, social justice, common good, a group of people who really care about humanity as a whole. So for me, I think, you know, it really fits into my agenda of trying to understand, you know, this big wave of decentralization that's going on in the world.
It's quite many attempts, yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, if you look at Europe right now, I mean, there's BlaBlaCar in Italy, there's Zipcar in France. So people are sharing more. You know, as you go from 7 billion people on the planet to 10 billion people, we do not have to compete and fight for resources like the old times. We just have to be smart and share. If we share our houses, if we share our cars, if we share our resources with other people,
that's enough for everybody.
That's enough for everybody. And you don't have to go to wars with another civilization and then, you know, and for your own growth. So,
but this kind of decentralization and the sharing, I think, at least the way I see it, consciousness play a big role. That's one thing. And how to organize it? And are we ready to really move that way? And then on the other side, we still got this measly 2% of population who actually holds all the assets. So how we can move through this?
I think it's a very interesting question that you asked. I think we are, as you said, I mean, the consciousness is evolving. I mean, the IQ of the world is doubling because of the internet. I mean, the amount of information that is being produced now is much more than what was being produced in the last 5,000 years. The information is doubling every 6 months. So, and all of this humanity is plugged into the singular consciousness called the internet. And that is, you know, I mean, there's this technological consciousness. And then it is scary in a way because, yeah, you know, this knowledge can be used for the good things and for the bad things as well. And we've seen both sides of it. I mean, more good because, you know, it is in innate nature.
People are waking up, yeah.
Exactly. And they're able to sort of realize the concept of Advaita, the interconnectedness of the human consciousness. We're all part of the same source. Mm-hmm. We're all part of the same spirit. And when we realize that, sharing becomes easy. We also evolved collectively towards taking humanity to the next level. I mean, as far as this 2% is concerned, I think, you know, they probably had a vision for humanity and they probably realized after the two wars in Europe in the last century and what could happen if there are too many power centers in the world, and perhaps it was good to centralize power. Maybe that was the ideology. I do not know. I'm speculating here. But hopefully, I think, you know, Europe has evolved. It's gone to the next level. I mean, there are European countries. Yeah, I mean, there's the European Union. And, you know, they've been pioneering everything now, you know, sharing economy, sharing cities, smart cities, eco-friendly development. So Europe has sort of been in the forefront now of guiding humanity towards, you know, a more sustainable future. So I do not know what the role of, you know, concentrating power would be in the future, but I think people would benefit more from more decentralization, yeah. You know, giving power to the people.
So one way is really to be connected in the local community and to work the best way in that, yeah?
Absolutely, because, you know, yeah. The people living in the local communities are more responsible for the nature around them. If the decision making is taken 2,000 kilometers away from, you know, where they live, I mean, the people living in the center,
they're not connected to that.
They're not connected to the nature, I mean, and it is not going to impact them in any way.
And then, since you went through actually the millenniums in your talk, and my thought actually was like, how the civilizations, they were great civilizations, actually they had one of the best models how to structure the society, and they were working, functioning, and I wanted to ask you how they could do it. And in between you said technology, so what kind of technologies these old civilization had?
Right, the very interesting book by, you know, called Collapse, you know, which was written by a gentleman called Diamond. Mm. He talks about why societies, you know, he wrote two books. One is called Collapse, another one is called Guns, Germs, and Steel. So he spoke about these different technological factors that allowed certain civilizations to grow and evolve and go to the next level. So he, for example, gave the, you know, the example of the Spanish Empire in South America. I mean, the Spanish had the guns and they went to South America.
But there were Incas and Mayas there. There Incas was as well. Perfect examples societies.
Absolutely. So, but this technology that the people had allowed them to sort of go on and conquer new civilizations. But the question that he sort of puts together is on the collapse of civilizations. You know, he also talks about the cycle of, you know, rise and fall. Mm-hmm. He gives the example of the Icelandic people, the Norwegians who went to Iceland, and they set up a base in Iceland. And the problem with the Norwegians was they were trying to colonize the local Inuit people, you know, by converting them to their own culture, by bringing Christianity and so on. And those people are worshipping nature and, you know, they didn't sort of really like the push. So there's a big divide between the Inuit and the Norwegians. So the Norwegian settlement did not learn from the Inuits because the Inuits had understood the nature in that part of the world. So they knew how to fish for whale blubber, which is used for heating, and they didn't know how to, you know, where to look for fish, how to fish in those waters in the extreme cold. And so the Norwegian society collapsed in Iceland. So one of the major lessons from history is that we need to sort of learn from other civilizations for humanity to go forward. You can no longer have this ego of the superior and inferior race. Every indigenous civilization, however primitive or however advanced, has something useful to provide for the collective development of humanity. And so this is at the crux of the lessons that we can learn, you know, from our past. And if we sort of break down these barriers of the upper civilization, lower civilization, because every civilization has gone through a peak and a fall.
So prejudice, and it's also, like, I would call it attribute of the ego, that you think that that civilization is better than something which was existing before.
Exactly.
You even knew that there would be something there.
Exactly. I think you've got the crux of what it's trying to say, which is, you know, every civilization has gone through this fall and this trough and this... talking to this gentleman.
But you would, you know, that was actually a trigger my mind process. What technology, you know, like if, you know, like in a way, if we go to the local community and we actually do realize that for self-realization, you have to be aware that we are connected and we are definitely connected globally. So it's oneness of all of us. Which kind of technology should apply in that? You know, because it's one way which some, you know, they call it romanticism or utopia or whatever, to go into the agriculture community or families or something like that, and those are mushrooming right now. But how to reconnect everything then in the pattern or network? What technology? Okay, beside the internet, but I couldn't figure out for myself. And I think that is also the others are trying to, you know, because if it's Orville here, Konohana family there, then the Finhorn, there are many, yeah? So what to do with it? What technology would...
I think the fundamental of all human evolution is information. Mm-hmm. You know, if you look at societies, why certain societies are ahead, why certain societies are behind today, it is technology, fundamentally. How capacity is used, how efficient a technology is, because money or economic growth is based on efficiency in use of technology and resources. So fundamentally, technology, information technology, computers, internet are key factors. But there is also things like design, you know, using capacity, sharing resources, and things like that. Because, you know, at the end of the day, if you ask ourselves, what is the destiny of the human race? You know, we can go back to some of these theories from academia, for example, the Maslow's pyramid, where he says that, you know, you need to have basic needs that for food, clothing, and shelter, and then you need other people to respect you, self-esteem, and then you self-actualize. You ask these questions of who am I, what am I, why am I here? And then there are these things like peak experiences, like connection with God and the divine and all that stuff. So to get to the higher levels, the lower levels need to be met. And that can be done with the help of technology. You have, you know, mechanized farming, you know, you have sensors in the ground which can improve your productivity, you have automated drip irrigation and so on. So there's enough technology to sort of free us from the day-to-day labors and, you know, allow us the time to sort of sit down and think and to understand what is going on and to also experience at a conscious level the magic that's happening in the world, the magic of the divine.
Yeah, the... And I think that is actually now the, as they call it, the hot topic in the planet, how to do it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah,
from attempts. How far are we in Orville? I mean, there's ideals, there's Sri Aurobindo and the mother writings, and really a powerful idea which attracted millions. And yet, 2,000 of us, or even somewhere maybe less, we are trying, but how far we are with something? Because you are coming as outside observer, so you maybe see, and you were here like almost 10 years back?
2007, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's wonderful. I mean, every time I come here, there's so, you know, it's not as you know, as fast as you know, China or any other country where there's rapid growth and development. You know, the pace of growth is smaller. You know, from a physical material perspective, there's definitely sort of development and change. But I think from a spiritual, intellectual perspective, I see a lot of young, interesting people coming and going. I think a challenge for a community like Orville is to attract this diversity. I mean, to bring in people from different walks of life, from different intellectual, you know, backgrounds, because, you know, reality is not unidimensional. It is not only spirituality. There's spirituality, there's technology, there's economics, there's politics, there's agriculture. So there's every dimension to this reality. And an expertise in every single dimension would really help, you know, get a total understanding of what is going on. And I think the challenge of Orville is to sort of pass on the baton to the next generation, to try and identify some of these people who come from outside and give them an opportunity or give them a glimpse of the great vision of Sri Aurobindo and the mother. I mean, the critical importance of, you know, this grand vision to take humanity forward in the 21st century. So I think that's probably one of the things I would recommend, is to kind of build diversity, get more Europeans, Americans, South Americans, Africans, Asians to come here and, you know, from
I think it's more connected with actually the other hot topic which is on right now, economic crisis and money support, although we all know it's not so relevant at the end of the day, right?
But as you see from the Maslow's hierarchy, I mean, the basic needs have to be met. Yep. So although we want to, you know, disconnect ourselves from monetary gain, it is one of a, you know, as I would like to put it, a necessary evil. You know, you need to have the basic needs met. You need to have a certain level of quality of living here so you can stop thinking about money and start thinking about the divine and doing the necessary things.
But through the so-called development, right, especially last 50 years, I think that what somebody calls basic needs are really diverse.
Right.
Right.
So how to define that? Because I think even in Orwell, we are somehow struggling. What is the basic need, you know? And at the end, somebody who's going forward and want to really implement the self-realization, those some called basic needs, because, you know, they're falling off because you don't need them, right? So how to deal with that?
Well, in ancient India, and, you know, look at the rishis and the munis and, you know, all these people, they basically disconnected themselves from the material realities of the world, the three lower chakras, the heart chakra, the stomach chakra, and the reproductive chakra, because, you know, it's all maya, you know, it's all the sensory reality of the world. They disconnected themselves because they never went and worked, they went and begged for food, or, you know, there were other people who donated food to these Swamijis. And so they survived. So the minute you decouple yourself from the needs of the world, you're able to focus on the divine, which is the fundamental crux of spirituality, at least from this part of the world.
At some point,
yeah. And even in you know, the monasteries of Europe and you know, in different monasteries in Asia, it is the same order. I mean, there would be villages that would donate to the monks. They would create the food and they would give it to the monks, so the monks could kind of focus.
Do the spiritual work for the rest of the
for the rest of humanity. I mean, it's a 100th monkey effect. So once the monks realize what it is, and then they can sort of take it on.
But we are evolving, no? Because now you see, you come into paradigm that basically you want to grow spiritually, yet you are fully aware that you still got the body and still have some basic needs, but there are some who are really just gurus or whatever, avatars. But I think the masses are awakening, and that also bring that conflict within you. So what is the basic need?
You know, the Vedic texts, when we go back to the Vedic texts, because I think the time is cyclical, you know, from what I've understood, and all the questions have been answered in a different time, in a different context. So there are two paths to nirvana, the two paths to, you know, self-realization, or for the body to sort of, for the jivatma to be one with the paramatma. One is sannyasa, the other one is samsara. So sannyasa is leaving all the material desires of the world and just going away.
Worldly desires.
Exactly. And the other one is samsara, which is to realize the divine through sexual union or through love and affection with the partner. And there are these two very clearly laid out paths in the Vedic texts. So a community like Orwell, you can have a family, you can live with people, you know, you can build this communal bonding and still realize the divine. It's just that all your basic needs have to be met, so you're not wasting your precious, you know, intellectual energies
on
those things. So, you know, like the monks of Tibet, or, you know, the monks of northern part of India, that, you know, their basic needs are being taken care of by the society, so they are able to advance forward for all of humanity. And I think that's the role I see in Orwell as well. I mean, there's so much knowledge that's being produced here. There's so much advancement that's being made in terms of the consciousness, in terms of understanding this, the reality we live in. They really have to meet the lower needs of survival with the help of consulting, with the help of some kind of a technological, you know, progress. So the rest of humanity has an exchange sort of mechanism. And, you know, they take care of us and we take care of them in some way. So
and yet, there are some discrepancies and also extremes which we can see from the so-called third world, like Africa, South America, India partially, Asia, that masses, even if they are really well educated, they are still clinging to what to call the basic needs, and they want to progress just in that. And to me, that is, it's kind of painful to watch, you know, because you see, like, somebody who has got capacities all over the world, and yet is this in depression state, that it cannot overgrow this basic need, and he thinks that really needs to fulfill that. And on the other side, that comes the influence from the, call it so, West, with the mental slavery, that you need to have this, you need to have that. And somehow, like in discussions, I cannot go forward, and I'm trying to figure out where's the catch.
You know, this is wonderful. I read a lot of, you know, notes from the Torah and the Kabbalah. It's one of my favorite religions, Judaism. Abraham Joshua Heschel was a monk who talks about the finiteness of life. He says, across humanity, some of the greatest conquerors, like Alexander and everybody else, has tried to conquer space. Space has been the essence of human conquest. But at the end of time, space has no relevance. So time is the heart of existence. So how we use this time to basically understand the divine, to realize who we are, what we are, why we're here, where we came from, and where we're going, I think is far more essential than these material realities. The unfortunate nature of the world we live in is that we have created this scarcity. Instead of using technology and creating abundance, we've created a scarcity where we're all running this rat race for somebody else. We're all playing a role as a husband or a wife, a teacher, a businessman.
And a lot of fears comes from it.
Exactly. So we're always trying to satisfy somebody else's need without really trying to ask ourselves what we want, where we want to go, how we want to evolve. And so as you rightly identified, a lot of these people in the third world who are still sort of running behind money are doing so because of the 100th monkey effect. Because everybody else is running, so I'm running as well. There are a few of us who are awake. A few of us who are...
It's really hard, you know? Because I know if I go back and sit in front of the TV for 1 week, it's like, you know, I'm supposed to because everybody else got it. But it's catch you in and you are a slave of the money because you're supposed to. And right now, I know that some people do two works, if they're lucky, just to meet the ends, loan after loan. And it's like, I don't think it's fair.
It's not. But, you know, that's the design of the society. I mean, the only way people can be freed from this, you know, self-slavery, I mean, what Sri Aurobindo also talks about, right? I mean, 9/10 of the time is being wasted on just sheer survival. And the humanity cannot evolve and go to the next level if it's
just only, that, yeah.
only surviving. And so we need to thrive. We need, you know, survival is, you know, it's a 15th, 14th century idea. I mean, we have to thrive with the amount of technology we have. We can desalinate seawater. We can produce solar power. You know, they're talking about fusion. So there are enough technologies that are coming. It's just that we need to sort of, from a community perspective, look at ways in which we can create value outside the community so we get the money into the community so people are self-sufficient, people are happy, and you know, they're able to focus on things beyond money because they spend majority of the day focusing on
something
survival.
Which is like, yeah, survival mode. It does throw you in depression state because it's like, it's not a nice feeling if you're just fighting for, yeah, let me bring that, we got some food on the table or this and that. And then you maybe climb up over this really, really basic, but you come to some level and think, okay, I get something, but you're still pursuing just that. So you're in a, like a hamster in that wheel, too fun. You don't realize that maybe somebody is getting really rich out of you for that reason, yeah?
Exactly. I mean,
what about those who are actually getting rich, you know, because there are some who created this model of scarcity. These people don't have consciousness?
Well, I think the great... there's a wonderful book by Richard Dawkins called The Selfish Gene, where he talks about the whole point of life from a genetic evolutionary perspective. He says the reason why we take care of our parents, why we take care of our children, is because the greatest record of human history is the genome. We want to protect our gene pool. We want to learn everything and we want to pass it on. So we want to survive in the planet across time reproducing. And so we want to create everything in our own image, in our own idea. And that seems to be the ultimate sort of sign of the human ego, to basically sculpture a planet that's based on your own ideas and thoughts and images. So money is a way of control because you only have 24 hours a day. You can only do so much. So money is basically time. If you have enough money, you control enough amount of time and you can get people to do the things you want to do. So which way? You basically kind of sculpture and design.
Because the chosen and genome is coming from those 2%.
Yes.
But that's wicked, no?
It is. Well, you know, I mean, what we think is wicked. Everybody has their own dharma. The interesting thing is to understand the dharma and to have an opportunity to have a dialogue and to, you know, really understand what they're trying to do. And because there is no irrational human being. Everybody has some rationality. It's just that rationality does not gel well with the majority. So that's what we need to understand. And
shall we conclude?
Wonderful. Thank you for all the wonderful questions.
And yeah, no, thank you for answering them, and I hope to see you again. And sharing, we can go forward.
Well, absolutely. I'm hoping to come back here and, you know, give back to Orville as much as I can. And thank you very much for this wonderful sort of, you know, Orville radio station. It's a great way to sort of propagate ideas. And
that's the basic of sharing, right?
Exactly.
We are fighting 10 years for that we are allowed to share the information, which... sometimes I'm not really share so freely as it sounds from the ideological part, unfortunately.
Well, we'll wish and pray for you know, the expansion of Orville Radio, and thank you for having me here today.
Thank you.